This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
And joining us right now is Aaron Goldsmith from the Mariner broadcast. And it was a great start to the season with watching Felix Hernandez. And really the changes, is, I guess you could say, we now have an updated model for expectations from Felix. It's different from the past. The K's are gone in the King's Court, but the success was there on the field.
Hey, John, good to talk with you. Yeah, it was fun to see Felix be able to pitch into the sixth. We knew that 2 days ago he was not fully stretched out, so we weren't exactly sure what to expect in terms of how amped up he would be and going up against, obviously, a very good Indians lineup. But, yeah, you're right. We saw a little different Felix, which I think when you look at over the course of his career, I mean, this is a guy who has continually evolved, so why wouldn't he evolve again? We're all excited to see his next start, but what a great start for Felix here in 2018.
What did you like about the way that he moved the ball? Because he's always had the ability to do that and really throw some nasty pitches. But knowing that the fastball is really now 91, 92, you know, the fact that he can have the motion on the pitches can at least have the success on the field.
You know, if you go back, John, a few years ago when he came in second of the Cy Young to Corey Kluber, I mean, his average fastball, I would venture to say, was somewhere between 92 and 93 miles an hour. I think the velocity, people like to make a big deal out of Felix's velocity compared to when he was 20, 21, 22. But he has been an elite-level starting pitcher with an average fastball at 91 to 92 miles an hour. I mean, you mentioned his movement. He has four above-average, four-plus pitches that he can throw nearly in any count that he wants. We all know about the changeup. The curveball never gets enough love. It is truly, I mean, there have been some seasons where the curveball has been as good of a pitch in some ways as his changeup. When the day comes when Felix has been in the league for 20 years, I mean, he's going to be the best junk ball pitcher of all time because he has feel that you cannot teach. You can't coach the type of feel that he has on his pitches, and to be able to throw them at different velocities, you turn a curveball into now not just one pitch but two pitches. We even saw it with his changeup, taking something off of his changeup even more. We normally see the changeup somewhere between 86 to 89 miles an hour. We saw 84 mile an hour changeups 2 nights ago from Felix. So his feel is second to none. And so this, I guess, should be no surprise that he's able to continue to mature as a pitcher for a guy who has already accomplished so much.
Yeah, but of course, I guess the one thing that even maybe last year, maybe the last 2 years, and Mel Stottlemyre addressed this a little bit, that, you know, Felix still tried to reach back to the past, and, you know, he'd be out there, the K's were popping up, and all of a sudden he's there with a 1-2 pitch. Next thing you know, he's trying to blow it past somebody, and it's now 3-2, and it extended some things that probably didn't need to be extended, and, you know, now this first start, because I even bet when he came into spring training, he sounded almost defiant. I'm going to be what I am. Well, what he is right now is a better pitcher because it looks like he's made that adaptation and worked with it, where maybe the last year or two, he was still trying to hold on to the old Felix.
Yeah, and I think last year we were starting to see more signs of this new Felix you're referring to, but obviously injury just cut that season short. I mean, Jerry has said it multiple times. If they can get the type of production that they saw in what was just under 20 starts last year for Felix with the type of innings that he was able to accumulate the year prior to that, I mean, the Mariners will be in a very good place. And I asked Jerry point blank, is this a conversation that either Jerry or Scott sat down and had with Felix at some point? And that is to say, in so many words, Felix, we need you to strike out fewer guys, get more ground ball outs, generate more weak contact, and be able to get through the sixth inning with roughly 85 pitches. And Jerry said that they never actually said that to Felix, that this was something that, hey, Felix is a smart guy. He's more than a veteran pitcher. He's been around a long time. This was something that every player goes through and figures out on their own. When they just simply look up and see what's happening, they're very confident that Felix would make that adjustment. And as you've noted, he clearly has started to do exactly that.
How do you think that they did the thing with the fans? Because that, I think, was the most stark thing, where they, you know, they didn't do the K's. They tried to have more contact and stuff like that. I mean, getting the fans to at least work with Felix. And did Felix even know this was happening out in the King's Court?
You know, I don't know too much about that, John. I don't know as if the fans had much choice of the matter, and if I'm not sure if Felix was looped in on that. But from what I could tell, Kings Court was still rocking a couple of nights ago. They were still up on their feet, still cheering for everything Felix does. So I guess that's as much as I know about the involvement of Kings Court, just kind of like the king himself.
Yeah, but that was the great part. Always going to stay energized, but it's energized more in adjusting to the things now that you know, can really extend Felix and make him that effective. It's like, okay, let's not worry. You know, they're going to shout strikeouts and strikeout and all that stuff, but they were yelling contact and all that. It's like, it was really kind of fun to watch that the fans, you know, were kind of doing in there, and also maybe not coaching Felix, but working with Felix to be the new Felix.
Well, I'm excited for the in unison 6-4-3 chant from Kings Court, which maybe we'll be hearing in his next home start. But, you know, hey, people in Kings Court, they want one thing and one thing only. They want to see Felix go out there and pitch deep into a game and to see a Mariners win. And whatever that will take, they are more than certainly on board for, especially if they get a free turkey leg out of the gig.
Absolutely. And, of course, today is going to be James Paxton, and I would imagine genuine excitement about you know, seeing him out there with that great left-handed fastball.
Well, Paxton is, we saw last year, I mean, we knew it before last year, he has the stuff to be one of the truly elite starting pitchers in the American League and one of the most dominant left-handed starting pitchers in all of baseball. We're all pumped to see what he can do today. He has no pitch limit on him. He was fully stretched out in spring training. You know, Paxton, we saw early last season, if not for Chris Sale, let's call it the first month and a half, 2 months of the year. I mean, Paxton was right there pre-injury in a Cy Young conversation, although it was far too early in the season to actually have those talks. If Paxton can stay healthy this season, coming off what was a career year last year in terms of starts and innings pitched, I don't think there's any limitations as to what James Paxton can accomplish, because you just simply do not see his kind of stuff from the left side in almost any starting rotation with the exception of Chris Sale. I mean, he is a very, very unique starting pitcher, and I'm excited to see what he obviously can do today against the Indians, a team that has a pretty powerful lineup.
And if it gets off to a good start, then, of course, if Marco Gonzalez can come in and do the same. I mean, he's kind of the swing guy because, I mean, you know, success is going to be there for the team if you get good pitching out of Felix and maybe some seven innings out of Paxton. But Marco Gonzalez is kind of the wild card, because if he can be a number three that can pitch like a number one or number two, the whole season can be so different.
Yeah, I think Marco, for me, was the guy that I was most excited to see in spring training, simply because he was a guy, as many people know, who was out of options. He had to make the team. He was essentially guaranteed a spot in the Mariners starting rotation. And more than that, this is his first full season coming off of Tommy John surgery, and his first full season in the Mariners organization after being traded last summer. And if you talk to a lot of guys coming off of Tommy John during that rehab year following the operation, they will mostly all say the same thing, and that is, there's some days you wake up and you feel like your arm is just like it's always been. It's brand new, it's fresh, and you can throw and pitch just like you always have. And then there are other days when you wake up and you feel like the surgery was like an hour ago. That's just the type of life for a guy recovering off, coming off of Tommy John. So now Marco's had a full season of recovery, now a full off season, has I'm sure felt more comfortable now in his new surroundings with a new organization. And for Marco, a guy with a terrific changeup, does not have to pitch like a number one or even a number two. If he can just be a really solid back-of-the-rotation guy behind Mike Leake, Paxton, and Felix, that's all the Mariners are asking for. Get deep enough in the game that you're not having to call on your bullpen too early on a regular basis. And we're all excited to see what Marco has to offer, because he can throw that cutter now, which is a big thing for Marco. That's a pitch that basically everyone does not like to see a pitcher throw coming off of Tommy John, because, just for lack of a better phrase, the torque on your elbow that pitch causes. So that's going to be even further of an equalizer for Marco Gonzalez. So hopefully good things to come this year for Marco and the whole Mariners rotation.
Tough break on Mike Zunino, having to go on the injured reserve list with a oblique injury, and a little scary the other day when all of a sudden his replacement gets a little bit banged up. So that was tough, because he had done so well this spring.
Yeah, and you know, the funny thing with Mike is it's never been a question of injury. I mean, this guy has been as healthy as anybody over the course of his professional career, not just in the major leagues. So Obviously not what we wanted to see, not what Mike wanted to see to start his season, especially coming off what was a really, really strong spring training for Mike Zunino. It's a grade one strain. This is not as serious as Ben Gamble's, for example. There's certainly hope that he will be back with the team in the starting lineup and behind the plate sometime not too far from now in the month of April. So the Mariners will have to kind of tread water without him. David Freitas obviously has been recalled from Tacoma. There is not a ton of experience, to put it mildly, behind home plate for the Mariners, but hopefully they will not have to be without Zunino for very much time.
No, that's true. And again, just have to get a little more luck with the injuries and all that. Great start for Nelson Cruz. And boy, the one story the Seattle Times had this week talking about the extensive training that he has and trying to keep his body in great shapes, and it looks like it's certainly working.
Well, there's nobody that we have seen who is walking back and forth from the weight room more than Nelson Cruz. He's either in the cage or in the trainer's room or in the weight room. He's a ferocious worker, and one of the great stories that we always like to share about Nelson and his preparation, which goes beyond just the physical side of things, is in this era of video, Nelson Cruz, before he goes to bed every night, watches film of the next day's starting pitcher before he falls asleep. I mean, he is already looking at tomorrow after being whatever, 3-4 hours coming off the end of his game that night. So the work ethic for Nelson Cruz is second to none. He is absolutely beloved by his teammates, not only here, but you talk to anybody, whether it be in Baltimore or in Texas before that. He is one of the most beloved guys in this game. He is a Hall of Fame teammate and a guy that the Mariners are very lucky to have. And you know, I say this all the time to Blowers, we can't take for granted these home runs that we see from Nelson Cruz. The home run that we saw him hit two nights ago, there aren't many guys who can hit a ball that high and have it actually get out to left center field. You can do that down the line, but there aren't many guys who can punt one Ray Guy style to left center and have it actually get out like Nelson Cruz did. He hits them in all shapes and sizes, and it's an absolute pleasure to be able to watch him on a daily basis. And hopefully the first, no doubt, of many, many more for Nelson Cruz this year.
Pretty exciting time. It looks like you're going to be able to enjoy this Easter weekend and really see some good baseball.
Yeah, it was kind of strange having a day off yesterday after one game into the season, but that's just the way that it goes, and probably good for the guys as well to kind of be able to settle into some of their new homes here in Seattle. But day game today, guys are getting loose, taking some day batting practice as we speak, and then, of course, day game tomorrow as well for the Mariners before the first road trip. So nice to start at home for the first time in a little while.
Absolutely. It was a great one, and enjoy yourself today. Hey, Aaron Goldsmith, thanks for joining us.
You got it, John. Thank you.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. This is the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Pete in the Bronx. Hey, Pete, how are you?
Hey, Professor, happy Easter to you and your lovely
happy
wife.
Happy Easter to you.
Good to hear your voice again. A couple of real questions, you know, to you. First one, do you see them trading down like they usually do?
Yes, I do. I think it's almost inevitable. I mean, it may be more difficult this year because they may have a chance to get a pretty decent pick at 18, maybe the second running back, maybe the second or third pass rusher in a pass rush dry draft. You know, that may be a temptation, but, you know, they still have a bunch of needs. They have 8 draft choices, but remember, they don't have any in the second, third, and sixth rounds, and so I think it's pretty well points to the fact that they'll probably be trading down to fill in some holes in the draft.
If they trade down, will they take Shaq's brother?
Very possibly, yeah. I mean, you know, that because I think he's more of a third-round grade, and if that's the case, you're sitting right now with 3 third-rounders. You know, trade downs could give them – it's still going to be hard to get a second, but I think it could give them a couple more third-rounders. And usually when they do third-rounders, they have second-round grades on them because, you know, like last year when they traded from 26 to 35, you know, and they picked up a whole bunch of defensive backs and Chris Carson, you know, all the values were either second-round grades on their board, third-round grade in one case, Tedrick Thompson, and then a fourth-round grade on Chris Carson.
I know that – they have had some misses the last 3 years, but I wanted to say this a couple of weeks ago last time I'm on. But But can Seahawks fans give this front office a break, please? I'm a guy that the professor can tell you. I go on national radio, and I show nothing but complete confidence in this front office. You have the best owner in the world in Poe Allen. They will get it done again. It may not be this year, Seahawks fans, 12s, but I promise you, 2019 on, Professor, I see this team coming back stronger than ever. I love what he's doing. I love what Snyder and Pete's doing with the secondary. I like what they're trying to do with the defensive line. The linebackers are your leaders of this football team. And as long as you got number three at quarterback and get him some help at receiver, okay, you're going to be fine. Mm-hmm. That's how I feel about this team. I'm not uptight about them. I think they did it at the right time, Professor. I think that they did it a year early than a year too late, and I'm glad. Okay, and I love those guys who are gone. I love Sherman. I love the old secondary guys. I love Vinny. Mm-hmm. I love Averill. But it's time to move on. It's time for some new young blood. And I don't care what Sherman says about people get tired of hearing the same speeches. The bottom line is, young guys, as long as they're getting playing time and they're hungry and we're winning, they're going to listen to the rah-rah speeches. Professor, I love you. Have a good Easter, buddy. I love you. You and your wife. You take care, my man.
Thank you very much. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421, ESPN. Let's go to Rashid in Bothell. Rashid, how are you?
Hi. Good morning, Professor. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm fine. Great way to start the Mariner season, and the weather gods are being kind to us as well. So I'm sure the spectators are going to have a good weekend of baseball and good weather and stuff. Amazing start. I'm always hopeful. And just as Denny O'Neill said the other day, we finally won a one-run game that we would almost lose every other year and stuff. So that's a good omen.
No doubt. I mean, I think that's a way to start it off. And I think the big thing is that you see an adjustment in Felix that may help. That's positive. You can see that the defense is going to be fine. Still worry about the injuries. Now you add Zanino to the mix. But overall, it was a perfect way to start the season because, everybody was all worried and naturally, rightfully so, about the pitching staff. And Felix was able to respond. We'll see how Paxton does today and how Marco does over the weekend.
Yeah, that'll be great. Hey, Professor, I actually, the previous caller kind of stole my thunder because I was, really kind of getting mad at, a lot of people have a lot of questions about the Seahawks moves and stuff. And after listening to Pete Carroll and John Snyder on your show and a couple of other shows, I think they're on to something. And people are talking about legacies and stuff. I mean, they are... If you look what Pete Carroll has done since he's come back into the league, I mean, he's totally revolutionized the game and stuff. And even if you look at this, the new head rule, I mean, Seattle has been on the forefront of all that, taking the head out of the game and everything. He's the one who introduced the concept of speed on defense and everything. And so, when people are going to talk about legacies, don't forget, I think Pete Carroll's philosophy since he's come back since 2010 has kind of changed the game. And ask Bill Belichick who he respects the most and his vision, and he's always said Pete Carroll. So I think, yes, 2018 is going to be a tough year, but I'm so hopeful for 2019. And I think, Pete Carroll's resolve, I see the same thing that they did in 2010. And look, we had an amazing 5-6 year run. And I'll talk to other teams when they had these 5-6 year runs. So I'm so confident. What about you, sir?
Yeah, I think, again, you can't doubt him. If you doubt him, that's where you can be wrong. Because, again, there was a preview of coming attractions last year. If you look at the last 7 games, again, they weren't perfect. They went 3-4, obviously. They had lost a lot of close games. Now, again, the fact, that's good, bad, or indifferent because, again, you lose close games, but you put yourself in position to. But, again, better kicking would have resolved some of those games because they go 3-4. But the defense in the final 7 games really ranked in the top 10. I mean, they did it without Richard Sherman. They did it without Cam Chancellor and Cliff Averill. Now this year they have to do it. So you've seen that they can do it. That's why they need to get Byron Maxwell back, so that they have that cornerback on the other side and have enough depth at corner. But you know, they showed last year that they can play decent defense with what they had, and that's what they can have this year. And then it's a matter of what they can add to it to make it better. The system works. That's the thing that I think is so important. And the system was working even though it didn't have a running game.
Exactly. So, well, Professor, thank you for taking my call. And you and Pat have a great Easter weekend, and good wishes to her as well.
Hey, thank you so much. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Victor in Auburn. Hey, Victor.
Hey, John. Another great show.
Well, thank you.
Hey, a couple quick ones. John, can you give me an update or a review of this Sual Craven guy Denver picked up?
Yeah, it's kind of a weird one because I don't know what got into his head. I think he was worried about concussions, and so last year, and I guess, you know, sometimes he doesn't get along well with his teammates. He kind of, you know, went south on him and then decided, oh, I think I'm going to retire. And so he left the building and all that stuff, and then he kind of had regrets about it and then tried to come back, and then basically they wanted him out. They didn't want him to come back, and so they put him on the exempt list for the entire season. And I guess a lot of the players were happy about that because they didn't have him go. But he's a very talented player and was doing some good things when he played. But whatever got into his head apparently caused enough problems that they just wanted to move on for him. And so now, you know, they go ahead and they get him to make the trade. I mean, they're almost out of a punitive thing, demanding a third round pick for him. But in the end, they swapped picks in rounds 4 and 5. You know, they had to add a 5 to get him. So for the equivalent of a fifth round pick, a little bit less, I think they've got a talented player. They just have to see if his head's in the right spot.
Do you think he'll be able to take over Stewart's position?
I think he can challenge. I think he's talented enough to do it. It depends on where his dedication is. And if he is dedicated enough to do it, I think it adds a good athlete that can probably do some good things for the team.
Okay. And then, John, what if quarterbacks, say Cleveland trades out of the fourth, quarterbacks go 1 through 4, do you see Denver taking Chubb out of the best available 3 or 4 players?
I could see that because I think he can play linebacker in a 3-4. He can play defensive end in a 4-3, and he's one of the best players in the draft. And so, yeah, if they stay away from that. But I can't see, because I still think what's going to end up happening is, Cleveland's going to be sitting there at 4 with a chance to draft the running back, Barkley, and I can't see them passing him because I think they want to really upgrade the defense or the offense. And, again, Chubb would be a perfect guy to add on the other side of Myles Garrett. So we'll see. But, again, Buffalo, you know, is going to be trying to trade up, and they're going to have to pay a heavy price to get even to 4. But I think right now Cleveland's probably going to stay, and that's going to put Denver in a position. And I don't know. See if you agree with this. If they're taking a quarterback, Denver, I don't see them taking Baker Mayfield. I don't see them taking Josh Rosen. You know, figuring that I think Darnold's going to go number one. I can see John Elway taking the big, strong Josh Allen and then just stashing him till he's ready and then do it that way. I mean, if they are taking a quarterback. I mean, don't you agree that if Elway's taking a quarterback, he's going to go bigger, stronger, as opposed to small and lesser arm?
That's definitely what I've heard. I've heard Denver or Elway's in love with Allen. If he lasts that long, then I could see Denver taking him. I don't see him going for Baker Mayfield, because I know he's already said out before that he's determined to start and that he'd find it bad if he didn't get the starting ball. So I don't think they're going to be doing that. The only problem I have with Allen or any quarterback is I didn't see Denver do anything to try to help Lynch and move their style of offense to cater to his pluses and minuses. So I don't see them doing that with another quarterback that needs a year or two to develop.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I was thinking, if they do get the chance and then they're not going to pick a quarterback, I don't think they're going to go, if Barkley was around, I don't think they'd pick Barkley, because if you look into CJ's production last year, it was actually very good. He was, you know, in the top 5 in plays over 20 yards. Even though he didn't have the, you know, the 50, 60-yard plays, he was very productive. And in the 5 games they won, he had 20 carries in each of those games. I just think they need to be more committed to the run. And actually, what are you, like 20, 40 yards less than Fournette, but with a substantial less amount of carries. I don't think he'd get enough credit. So I think if they could shore up that defense, you know, losing a couple players, that they'll be right back into the mix with, you know, Kansas City and well, that's the only team, I guess. Maybe
See, I think Kansas City's going to drop.
Yeah,
I just really think Kansas. Don't you?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because they're not going to be as good on defense.
No, not on defense and with that quarterback coming. I know he's got all the talent in the world, but it's a lot different when you got 16 games to scout and improve it as opposed to just one or two starts here and there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
no, I think they can bounce back. I mean, at least now I think they definitely feel good about the quarterback. That's encouraging.
Yeah.
And you know, and they buy time to develop the next quarterback, which I think is going to be important.
Yeah. The one other thing I'm looking forward to see if they could develop a tight end. They need that threat down the middle with and I'm hoping this butt guy that's coming off the injury, that he might be an answer to their problems. I like Virgil Green, but I know he's gone. He was more of a blocker.
Yeah, he's over with the Chargers now. So.
Yeah. Hey, John, hey, you have a great weekend, okay, bud? Take care.
Okay, Victor, hey, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Dominic in Renton. Hey, Dominic.
Hey, John. I'm huge fan. First time I've ever been able to call in. Just wanted to say
thank you
for your show. Hope you continue doing the podcast. I listen all the time.
I appreciate that.
Quick question. I'm a huge fan of Deion Jordan. I think he's a huge dark horse coming into this year. What are your thoughts on him? And then my other question is related to the draft. I know that John's just not going to stay just out of the second and third rounds. He's going to get in. Do you see him going in via Earl Thomas trade, or do you see him going in another way?
Well, it still has to be the right trade on Earl, and I think it's going to be hard to get a number one. And I don't know what they would justify right now as a second-round pick plus. And so that's why I think it's going to be still very difficult for them to make a trade. But something has to give, because you know, it'd be a nice luxury to sit there at 18 and draft somebody, because I think they'll get a very good player, core group type player. But they also need a few more. And that's John Snyder's nature. And, you know, say what you want. It didn't work out for Malik McDowell, but it certainly may work out with the four draft choices they acquired in moving down to get Malik McDowell. Because, you know, they got Delano Hill and got Chris Carson. You know, they really got like three guys in the secondary and a running back, and that's pretty good. So, you know, that's the strength of what John's able to do. But because I still think he needs more to add, you know, it would be nice to get a young running back from this draft. It would be nice to get a pass rusher from this draft. But, you know, that's still to be determined how they can try to work that. But I think they're going to be aggressive, and I think the odds are they're going to trade down.
Couldn't agree with you more. I definitely see the Malik McDowell way heading in the same direction as well. Do you see Frank Clark and Deion Jordan really taking over the pass rush, at least so far, unless we draft them?
Yeah, they think so. I know that, you know, it was kind of interesting. You know, we talked to Pete at the owners' meeting this week, and naturally when you lose and are going to lose your two best pass rushers and Michael Bennett and Cliff Averill, and you're, you know, losing, you know, what, almost 20 sacks a year from the two of them, it's going to be hard to replace. But, you know, he really brought up the idea that Deion Jordan's really part of the mix because he got four sacks in limited playing time, and then, you know, he likes Barkevious Mingo because of his speed kind of getting into the mix. And he made the one interesting statement that, you know, of the pass rushers that he's had, this may be becoming the fastest group that he has. You know, Clark, Mingo, Jordan, and then whoever else they add. And so, again, that the accomplishments aren't there like they have in the past. But, again, I think he sees some potential there, and it's going to be interesting to see how he develops that potential.
That's really exciting, John, and I got to say, I'm excited about this year. It's nice to see the bandwagon fans jumping off the bandwagon, and the rest of us can watch what Seahawks really do. So thanks again for your show, and keep doing what you do.
Hey, thank you very much. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
All right, thanks to Matt Nelson for producing and running the show. Mariner baseball coming up right after this show. Mariner pregame and, of course, the baseball game with James Paxton on the mound. Load up the phone lines here, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. And we'll remind you this, we only have a one-hour show next week from 9 until 10, Mariner baseball following. Let's go to Sean in Newcastle. Hey, Sean.
Hey, John, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for asking. Big fan. So if you remember a couple of years back, Raiders were really hot. They had Derek Carr, like, I think a season where they went to playoffs. And then next year, they signed a bunch of people in free agency, and the next year, they were a bust. Do you see some similarity between them and Rams right now? Is there a possibility that they might be able to accomplish nothing, or is this for real?
Well, I think it's still a big question mark because what happened last year was a mistake that cost Jack Del Rio the job. You know, they felt, okay, everything's great. They got Derek Carr. They got the offensive talent. You know, they were able to add Marshawn Lynch. And then they made a change in coordinators, firing Bill Musgrave and promoting the quarterback coach, and he just wasn't ready to take over the job. The offensive line did not perform as well. The play calling was, you know, at least criticized almost like high school play calling, and so the offense dropped down. But where the real mistake was not getting enough guys on defense. The only free agent that they signed was Jelani Jenkins, and he was a linebacker for 1 year, $1 million, and he got cut. He didn't make the team. That was bad. Secondly, their top two picks didn't do anything because of injuries, and they were defensive guys. And so now nothing was added to the defense, and they got worse because, you know, to free up room to do Gabe Jackson and, you know, Derek Carr, they pretty much had to let guys go. So they were less talented of a team. Now what John Gruden's doing is getting in a lot of volume. Now it's eating up cap room. It's certainly, you know, causing them to release a few extra players like the punter, and they had to let Clive Warford go. So we'll see. But I think that talent-wise, they're still good. They've got a quarterback. They've got offensive weapons, and they've got John Gruden. Now it's just a matter, with the moves that they made on defense, did that make them better and at least able to make a run into the playoffs? And I think talent-wise, they're there.
Okay. Why didn't Seahawks sign Ndamukong Suh? I mean, we have a big hole in Michael Bennett and Cliff Gabriel. Is there anyone out there anymore, and we let Sheldon Richardson walk away too, any more who can actually add that kind of depth, or we are on our own now?
Well, what it comes down to is cap, because even with the limited roles of the six players that they've signed, you know, you notice they haven't signed anybody above $3.6 million a year, and they didn't even want to go to $8 million for Sheldon Richardson. You know, and so $14 million was just going to be too much that they could bite, and also knowing it was probably just going to be a one-year deal. So they elected to, you know, go a different direction. They were in the mix, but just not really hard into the mix.
Okay. My last question, Earl Thomas. Do you think, I mean, if you put your sports and analyst hat about what he did with Bobby Wagner, like the whole tweet thing, and the second thing when he went to the locker room in Dallas, do you think that kind of player deserves to be in our locker room? Again, put the talent aside. As an energy in the locker room, do we want other players to be getting some kind of thing from him, or is it okay?
You know, it's not okay, but it's not totally damaging. I mean, I think you can see it's his emotion. You know, he's been wondering about the contract for the last couple years. That's been on his mind, and it kind of exploded, and it didn't go very positive. But think about what he's done as a player. I mean, he's out there in a Super Bowl year with a shoulder that was, I mean, a Super Bowl year with a shoulder that was totally ripped up, and he played. He didn't back down. He's very intense, and he's a great player that sets everything up for this defense. And so, no, he's earned a spot in the locker room. Nothing has changed in that regard. Hey, thank you for the call, Sean.
Thank you so much, John. Really appreciate it. Take care.
Hey, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. And, of course, Mariner baseball coming up next, a big game with James Paxton on the mound. Give us a call here as we kind of wrap up this week's show. And a reminder, next week, only 1 hour, because Mariner baseball will start with the pregame at 10 o'clock. And then, you know, we'll be back right after that because we're going to get closer to the draft and, you know, get you ready for the draft. We got to get you – it's been fun in free agency. Just totaled up everything. 137 guys have signed right now as far as moving to different teams, and over almost 70. So basically you can say that half the list is almost gone right now. There was 413 free agents, and you know, the activity a little bit faster than last year. There was 168 signed moving to different teams, but the bigger thing has been more trades. 23 trades that have been executed in the month of March compared to 8 last year. So you can see it's been a very active free agency period and one that has been just kind of fun to watch, and we'll continue to do it because more free agents are going to sign. I mean, 5-6 signed yesterday, and that's on Good Friday. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Marcus in Puyallup. Hey, Marcus.
Hey, how are you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing phenomenal, thank you. Reason I was calling in is because I was trying to do my research and trying to find out where is how do we find out who we're looking at? You know what I mean? Like, as far as the draft. Because if you look at our season last year, we can credit this entire offseason to Blair Walsh. If Blair would have made his kicks, we would have went from 9-7 to 12-4. And we wouldn't have had the overhaul that we did. Now we're going to go into the next season with Jason Myers, who's no better than Blair Walsh.
Right.
So I'm trying to figure out.
Well, they still have time to add or draft a kicker. I mean, Nick Folk is still out there. You still have Sebastian Janikowski. So they can still add a kicker. There's still time to be able to do that. So they haven't run out of time there. But no, you're right. I mean, they took a major downgrade, going from, again, it was a struggling season for Steven Hauschka, but still, he's that good. And you saw how well he did for the Buffalo Bills. They just couldn't afford to pay $4 million for a kicker.
Right. So, have you heard of that kicker out of Florida, named Eddie Pinero, who kicked a 77-yard field goal?
I haven't heard much about him. Kind of give us a brief update because we had about 45 seconds or so. Good.
Okay. Well, apparently the guy he's the number one rated kicker in college football, and he just declared for the draft. Noticed that we didn't show up to his pro day. So I would imagine I would imagine he's worth a fifth rounder or a seventh rounder.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure they might be able to do that. I mean, he may go in the fifth round. We'll see, because if he's that good, then he's going to probably go a little bit higher than normal. I think the days of the second-round kicker, which we saw a couple years ago, that didn't work out too well. So I don't see that happening, particularly in a draft like this. But overall, yeah, I mean, they still have enough draft choices. They'll add draft choices and then be able to try to do that. Hey, thank you for the phone call, and thank you, everybody. Of course, it's been great on this great holiday weekend. Coming up next, Mariner baseball, chance to see James Paxton going against the Cleveland Indians. John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.